Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, along with Denise Miller, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow Pullman. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah and Whitman Recovery Community Centers. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. The Latah Recovery Community Center is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRCC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. Their hours are Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. The Whitman Recovery Community Center is located at 226 East Main Street in Pullman, and you can contact the WRCC by phone at 509-715-1111 or by email at wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com. And their hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addictions and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said, I am Radio Johnny, and she is Denise. Hello, Denise.
Hi, everybody.
How you doing?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to be anywhere. That's my motto. For the March calendar, you can head online at the LatahRecoveryCenter.org website and see all the cool and exciting things coming up for March. And just want to say we had our fundraiser breakfast and dessert yesterday, and it was super well attended, and everybody seemed to enjoy it. Megan Guido talked a lot about the new Whitman Recovery Community Center and what's going on there, and it was a good time. Mm-hmm. Good time was had by all. A long day for some of us.
Yes, but absolutely.
A good day was had by all. So, and we'll get to you next week on, they're still counting the dimes and nickels that people put into the envelope. So we'll find out what that is and update y'all maybe next week on it.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah. And today our topic is on the first 90 days of sobriety, mm-hmm. which in my experience was a bit of a beast. Just the first couple of days going through withdrawals from alcoholism, which I did at home pretty much alone because my wife was at work. And that was really dumb on my part because I didn't understand that alcohol withdrawals and withdrawals from benzodiazepines are the two withdrawals that you can actually die from because of the potential for seizures.
Yeah.
I've known people who have had seizures and heart attacks during withdrawals and mm-hmm. did not survive. So if you're thinking of getting sober from either one of those substances, some medical intervention would be a really good idea, you know, especially if you're as far along as I was drinking between a fifth and a half gallon of liquor a day. I didn't think it was that much at the time, but
same for if you're coming off of pain medication, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Anytime you
opioids.
Yeah, anytime you want to get off, getting medical intervention is always a good idea.
Yeah,
you know, with opioids now,
doctor.
they can give you medication that will not only stop the cravings, but will also, minimize the withdrawal effects, and you can taper off of those things, and things like Suboxone, and there's other medications as well that can help you with that. So anyway, keeping that in mind, then you get into, this assumes, of course, that you've decided you want to get sober, and what is that first 90 days going to look like? Because that's kind of the critical time frame. That's when a whole bunch of things are changing in your body and your brain. You're denying the receptors in your brain the thing that makes them happy, and they start going nuts. Just the physical, like I said, the withdrawals are one thing, but then things start changing. Hormones change. Liver functions change. Sleep habits become really weird. And we'll talk about all these things here. but it's also the greatest time for relapse. So that's why it's important to, you know, we'll go into some of the things here, why it's important to get involved in some sort of program, or at least program yourself to do some of these things to help avoid that relapse.
Yeah, have some supports.
Yeah, because once you get past that first 90 days, the odds of continuing in sobriety, you know, with the proper supports and whatnot in place gets a lot better. Mm-hmm. But that first 90 days is really pretty critical, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the first, after you get through that first, say, 3 months, 90 days, you are definitely starting to develop a new way of, a new habit or a new way of doing things.
Yeah. We hope. We hope. I mean, some people just stop and...
Well, and lapses or relapses can actually, you can learn from those too, so don't be too discouraged.
Right, right. So here are a few tips for getting through those first 90 days. And the first, and I stole this off the interweb, so whoever I'm plagiarizing, forgive me. The first one they talk about is the pink cloud. And the pink cloud is a phenomenon where you suddenly feel like high on life. You're starting to feel better. You know, the stuff's out of your system. You're starting to think a little more clearly. The grass is greener. The birds are chirping more sweetly. Colors are more vibrant. Things are beautiful. And you're loving life. All the feel-good chemicals are firing in your brain to try and make up for the substances that aren't there. But then you fall off, and that's just part of the ride. It's your brain getting readjusted to living without the substance you've been feeding it. So it has to learn to level itself out. So what do you do when you fall off your pink cloud? Suggestion is get grounded. You know, take comfort in community, mindfulness practices, or service through volunteering. These are all ways to reconnect with yourself. Knowing scientifically what is happening in my brain gave me permission to understand and accept what was going on and to be okay with it. You know, it helped me zoom out and see what was really happening. And that pink cloud, when I had my relapses, and the pink cloud hit me at about 30 days, and I was like, wow, you know, I'm going to these ANA meetings, and I'm making friends, I'm thinking differently, I feel good, I'm starting to actually sleep normally again, and, you know, I've got a lot of energy now that I didn't seem to have before. Maybe I'm better. Maybe a little bit of alcohol would not be harmful. Well, it was, and it didn't take but literally a few days before I was, you know, pretty much back to drinking like I had before. Maybe not the quantities, but, you know, the intent was the same. You know, get drunk, get high, get happy. And so I had to go back, you know, and go through the, you know, stopping, although it wasn't severe that time because I hadn't gone totally back to the place where I was, and I wasn't there for very long. It was only a matter of like maybe a week. And yeah, it can be very deceiving, because when you feel good, you think you can do whatever you want, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't remember like necessarily a pink cloud. I do remember the first 30 days that I was in recovery, I was actually in jail. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think I remember definitely feeling better and being excited about being in the program that I was in, where I was getting to go to classes and NA and have connection with people. And that brought me a lot of hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There, of course, were still problems and things like that and different challenges that I had to figure out in that first 90 days. But I'm kind of a person who really gets energized by being around people, so that really helped. That's cool.
Right.
So there
right.
may have been some pink cloud stuff. I don't know. I think I just felt pretty excited and hopeful in general. I still do.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you can, writing the pink cloud, and we'll go on to talk about this here, but it's not something that is like a super high. Mm-hmm. It's more like, you know, just this awakening that you're, you know, able to do more. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, life wasn't as bad.
Yeah, life is not as bad. And
it's not revolving around, you know, substances or alcohol.
Right, yeah. Right. And I only drank really for two different occasions. One, when things were bad, and two, when things were good. So, getting into that all good feeling on the pink cloud. Yeah. It did that to it. So going on, the next suggestion is ride the waves. You know, after detoxing, it often feels like being on a beautiful beach soaking up the sun. You get in the water, and then a wave comes out of nowhere and hits you. The waves keep coming, big, strong, and wild. Eventually, you make it back to the beach. This is your brain attempting to restore balance. It's natural. The only way to deal with it is to ride those waves, accept them for what they are, let them pass, and get back into the water of life. And, you know, along with the pink cloud was the problem of having to deal with life again. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, during my disease, when my active drinking, I abdicated all my responsibility to whoever would take it around me. You know, typically my wife, but whatever else, you know, it's because everything got in the way of my drinking. Nobody would just let me drink the way I wanted to. So I had to become as irresponsible as possible so that somebody would pick up the slack for me. And learning to ride those waves and actually meet everything, It kind of reminds me of the there's the word fear. They use it as an acronym. I've heard it around the rooms where they say in your active addiction, the acronym is F everything and run. Where in recovery it's face everything and recover. And facing everything is not always pleasant. There's a lot of stuff that was, you know, left undone while I was out there drinking, and a lot of chaos caused by me that had to get straightened out, you know, with my family, friends.
All the things, really.
Yeah, finding a job, you know, because when I was drinking, I was totally unemployable. Well, that's not totally true. Near the end of my drinking, I was pretty unemployable. You know, I've always been a hustler. You know, I'll find some way to make some money somehow. And I had pretty much even exhausted all of my wherewithal in that category, you know, by the end. I was pretty much just living to drink and doing whatever I had to do to get the money to drink. So, yeah, so I had to, you know, ride those waves and deal with the fact that my brain was not working right. Mm-hmm. You know, and trying to fix things.
Yeah. I would keep in mind that like every day that you're making progress is a good day, and keeping in mind gratitude. I remember, and I don't even remember when I stopped doing this. I still do this sometimes. I remember going to sleep at night, just doing a gratitude list, everything from, you know, the pillow that my head was on to the blankets keeping me warm to the roof over my head, to the food that I had that day, to the kids being in the home with me, just one more day of doing gratitude. And I would actually do that and keep naming things until I fell asleep. Before I had gotten into recovery, we were displaced with my husband and two young children. And so honestly, all the things that were happening, having a place to be and in recovering and finally having some support and counseling and things like that, it was actually a really good day. Even though there were a lot of challenging things, a lot of issues in relationships and navigating the local Latah County drug court program, it was still a good day because I wasn't doing it alone and I was making strides in what I was doing. So I just had to remind myself that. And I reached out a lot of times to people and would just listen to them share about their day and then see how I was doing afterwards, because some days we're crying on the floor in the bathroom, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's because you're trying to sort through and work on your life again, and it became messy.
Yeah.
You know, and so just kind of got to keep in mind that all the years that have passed, it's going to at least take that many years to put things back together. So.
Yeah. And even though things do get better fairly quickly.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, health and bodily feelings and this talking about your brain trying to rebalance, that is challenging. But the human body is a pretty resilient thing. I mean, my liver should be shot, but it's not. You know, it's healed up really well considering what I did to it. So it's like the least of my worries now. But yeah, the brain chemistry changing, you know, can affect mood, crying in the shower, just not wanting to deal with life. And then there's that little voice in my head that goes, go ahead, take a drink, you'll feel better. And the reality is I don't want that to be a reality. I mean, I'm in recovery. Why do I keep having these thoughts? Well,
it's your brain. It flashes back to what it used to do to make yourself feel better, you know? I think for me, there was a lot of regret about the choices that I had made during the 12 years that I used substances and pills, and like actually working on doing different and talking about how my choices affected my family and myself. Those were pretty emotional. I mean, it was good, but it was still very emotional, you know? And,
right.
You know, people are upset with you too. People are upset with me.
Oh, yeah.
Rightfully so, you know, and I was married at the time and trying to navigate my marriage and things with my kids. I had adult kids as well. Yeah, so it's a lot working on those relationships and making amends and then learning to do better as a friend, as a mom, and just working on healing those things. I feel really fortunate to have had such a great support group as I did recovery the first couple of years. I hadn't ever had counseling prior to that. I was like 40 when I finally got counseling. And so that was really beneficial. So I would encourage you, if you're in this new part of recovery, the first 3 months, even the first year, do what you can to find the support that you need, what you're feeling led to be a part of, and community can really make a big difference. That not being alone and being in rooms, either just with one other person or a group of people that have their own story and their own journey of where they've been, and the progress that they've made, that can really actually bring a lot of hope. And it brought me out of a lot of the sadness and regret that I had to know, okay, I'm not the only human being that has done this and has hurt themselves and others. And this person is, say, a couple years into recovery further than I am, and they're still standing here, and they're still coming and showing up and working on things. I can do this too.
Yeah, and we do that here.
We do.
I mean, that's
really do.
Our primary purpose is to, mm-hmm. you know, walk with people through, you know, all those states of emotion mm-hmm. and healing, you know, physically, mentally. Yeah, that's what we're all about.
It sure is. It's why I come to work every single day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
To let people. That's why we do this show. That's why Johnny shows up each week to do this show, is to bring hope to people in our community.
Yeah, we hope that's what we're mm-hmm. doing.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to the next one. I touched on this. The sleeplessness of early sobriety is tormenting, terrible, and pretty standard. Your brain, your hormones, and your body chemistry are still leveling out, and it takes time to regulate. You know, in the meantime, you can kiss regular sleep goodbye. So what do you do? Recommended, you know, steering clear of sleep aids if possible, because most of them are, you know, can't have the potential for abuse. But you can use things like melatonin, which is a natural
really
body
helpful.
Chemical.
Mm-hmm.
Essential oils, some people use. Mm-hmm. Or even environmental supports to help, like sound machines, reading a book, taking a warm bath before bed. Staying active during the day and eating healthy can also help. But, you know, hard to believe, but, you know, sleep will restore. And this is something I really suffered with. And finally, after about 2 weeks, I was only able to sleep for like literally half an hour at a time. And then I'd be wide awake and uncomfortable and, you know, just try to drink warm milk. And I'm lactose intolerant. So that was a horrible idea. But, you know, trying all these different mm-hmm. things. And I did finally go to my doctor and say, I can't think straight. I can't
right.
do anything. I haven't slept. And so he said, well, he says, I'll give you some medication, but I'm only going to give you like 3 days worth. And he said, get in your pajamas, sit on the edge of the bed, take this pill, and lay down immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I found out why, because
right.
it just
yeah,
knocked
true.
Me down.
Not
your butt. I don't even know what.
Right.
The thing was, but after like the second day, I was feeling better. I was waking up refreshed, actually, and started being more active. Because when you're tired, you're dragging. You can't, you know.
Yeah.
Getting regular
sleep
exercise.
Deprived is the actual thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It actually means something. You're deprived.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the third day, I didn't even take the medication because I just wanted to see. And I slept okay. So like the fourth night, I finished the last pill. And then things pretty much leveled out. There were still some sleep interruptions, but not big ones and not so much that it left me the next day just dragging. So, and melatonin wasn't a thing back then.
That's what I was going to say. So I like that you said something about melatonin, and I used that as well. And so the best way I can explain melatonin is it gives you that natural stuff that helps you initially fall asleep. But if someone knocks at the door or someone calls you or if your kid wakes up, you're going to wake up. You're not going to be like overly, you know, sedated or anything.
Right,
like
right.
It just initially helps you go to sleep. And also at one point, a couple of years into recovery, my youngest, and she was probably only like 3 or 4, got a hold of some like dissolvable, like chocolate flavored melatonin.
Mm-hmm.
And she like ate half the bottle. Okay. So I'm rushing her to the emergency room. I get to the window and I'm telling them what my little kid did. And they're just like, oh, it's okay. You can just go home. She's fine. And I'm like, are you sure? And they're like, yeah, it's totally okay. It's safe. It's not gonna.
Yeah. Yeah.
She didn't even sleep in extra long that morning. I was like, it was, you know, it kind of kept me up. I was kind of like a little befuddled
frazzled,
and everything
yeah.
like that, a little stressed out. And then she didn't even sleep in longer because it really does just initially help you go to sleep. So it wasn't,
right.
It's not dangerous for kids or toddlers. So
right.
It's safe for you. My middle daughter has said that she doesn't like to take it for very long because then she feels like she needs to take it to go to sleep. So I suppose there are different experiences for people, you know, can be slightly habit forming. But overall, I think that's the safest thing to go with is the melatonin. And that's a really neat thing about like going to a meeting or something like that or having friends in recovery is you can say, hey, so I'm having problems sleeping. You know, what are your suggestions? Or you can simply just get on and Google what are some different kinds of things you can do. I mean, over the last 12 years, I've heard, you know, don't. Being on screens a couple hours before bed isn't good.
Yeah.
Try not to eat before bed because that can keep you awake. You know, exercise during the day. Don't take naps if you can do that.
This is the alcoholic's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Limit the caffeine.
Yes, and that's kind of the thing is like exploring yourself. Like, okay, can I have coffee in the morning and then have another cup at 11? Or do I need to cut it off? Like how, you know what I mean? Each individual person can start to discern. There are actually things that you can look up that say how many hours caffeine usually lasts in your system. And it's at least 8, at least, or maybe more. So there are some different kinds of alternatives. Again, my kiddos like chamomile. Like the stuff that you have before bed instead of things that are more caffeinated, that kind of thing. It's just some kind of more herbal kind of stuff. Also, things that make your room smell nice. Oh, we used a lot of like lavender doTERRA when the kids were little. That was really helpful. We put that in a diffuser. Just different things like that.
Yeah.
I had a friend in recovery. She was actually a part of the program and she graduated 6 months after I was there. And she said that your bedroom should be a place where you sleep. Now I'm totally not, I totally don't do this. I'm guilty of using my bedroom to watch TV and all these things, but she swore by you make your bed in the morning. You only sleep in your room. You don't have a TV in there and you sleep. It's just, it's your sleeping room. It's your sleeping space. And I think that really worked well for her.
Yeah, I've heard that too. And the proponents of it are really, you know, are proof positive that it will help. You know, melatonin is produced in the body naturally.
It is.
You can take a little extra shot of it. And it's not something like you take it right before bed. You take it like an hour before bed.
45 minutes or so, yeah.
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 And once you get into that dark room,
right, and that's the other thing I was going to say.
Lay down
dark.
In a bed, if that's all you do is sleep there,
right?
Then that melatonin will start working more efficiently,
right?
And you will be able to fall asleep,
right? And that's the thing is your system and your sleep system is called
It's circadian rhythm.
Yes,
yeah.
And we're very susceptible to lights and different kinds of lights in our house. And so
and sounds,
if you need, yes, if you need to put something over your windows to make it darker, especially during the summertime here, just making those different kinds of adjustments and seeing what's working. Mm-hmm. I've used a fan for white noise for decades because I lived off of a highway with a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
And at one time there was a crow making all sorts of noise that I just, I wish that crow would have went away. But anyways, and so white noise tends to help. And there's different kinds of apps that you can have on your phone or different things that you can buy that can help you with that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I've got pink noise, brown noise, all that stuff.
All sorts of stuff. Yeah.
And
then once you get hooked on the fan, you've got to take it with you to the hotel if you stay somewhere else. So I guess I'm hooked on the fan.
Yeah, I have a friend who used to do that too. He's always had to have a fan by his bed.
I have to.
He even put one in his guest bedroom so guests could
have that option.
For me, it just annoyed me. It sounded like a fan running.
I can't sleep without the white noise now, but I have an app on my phone so I can take it with me, pop in earplugs, or just put it by the bed.
Yeah, well, and I got sober in the San Francisco Bay Area. We lived in a suburb. There was a major highway there. Mm-hmm. We weren't that close from it to it, but we were up the hill, so there was this constant drone of traffic. Mm-hmm. And for me, that actually
it helps
behaved
you, huh?
Like, you know, white noise.
That's fair.
When we moved up here into this quiet little town.
I know, you're all up on the hill, too.
We live on the edge of town. Yeah, it's like you might hear a truck or something coming down the highway in the middle of the night. But for me, it was just like, what's wrong? I need something. I need some sound.
Yeah.
But I've gotten used to it. And that's the thing with sleep. You know, your body will adjust to the environment. You know, do the things you can to help you get over that hump. And then, you know, if you can step back from them slowly over time, you know.
And there's something else that I just thought of, and that's discerning when it's the middle of the night or early in sleep or whatever it may be, and you wake up, and that discerning whether or not you're going to lay there and rest or if you actually need to get it up and do something, burn off a little energy, and then go lay back down again. You know, sometimes it was like, even though I'm not hitting REM, it's going to be best that I stay right here and just rest. And then sometimes it was like, okay, I'm going to get up. I'm going to do a few things. And then that made me tired and I could go to sleep.
Well,
just knowing yourself.
Funny story. You know, as I get older, I quite often have to wake up in the middle of the night and hit the little boys' room.
Every night for me.
And Monday night, there was a lunar eclipse. And so I woke up at like 3 a.m, my usual, and I went and did my thing, and I went, oh, the lunar eclipse is going on right now.
Nice.
So I put on a coat and went out on the front porch and looked at the lunar eclipse and took a few pictures and then cruelly texted them to some people who should have been in bed asleep, only to find out that one of my sisters was actually awake trying to see the lunar eclipse in California, but it was foggy. So so she was actually appreciative that she got to see it, like through the pictures I took. But you know, and then I went back to bed and fell asleep.
That's the other thing. I can't believe we didn't think of this and remember this. Okay, so some people actually sleep with their phone in the other room so that it doesn't bother them. I personally turn off all my notifications, but I leave my ringer on in case there's an emergency. I started doing that way back when my mom started having health problems and I needed to be able to be reached by her life alert or by her or or the hospital or who knows.
Right.
So
and that's,
some people
and that's
actually
what I
leave
do
it
too.
Somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah. I put my phone on the charger and, turn off the ringer, turn off, notifications, and your alarm will still go off.
Right. And you can also have a setting that is just emergency people that will it will ring through or text through. There's that kind of stuff.
But put that phone away.
Don't be woken up by notifications in the middle of the night.
Put it away way before you go to sleep too.
Yes.
Cuz once your brain's going to churn on information.
And there was another thing, just real quick, that I'm remembering, and that is I was doing a little research about people who, I want to say it was about ADHD, but some kind of mental health that was keeping people from falling asleep. And I want to say they said something about like blue glasses, wearing blue glasses for some hours before you go to
light,
sleep.
Yeah.
So you can put these glasses on and it'll cut out different kinds of light that will keep you from sleeping. So that's another
blue
thing.
Blue light will keep your brain stimulated, which is why if you look at television and programs, especially, informational stuff, news, talk programs, whatnot, there will be blue backgrounds everywhere to keep you lit up. So, it's a good idea to cut out the blue light.
Yeah, well, you could listen to our show.
Listen to the radio.
Go to our LRC site, listen to our show. I hear I have a really soothing, calming voice.
There you go.
That's what my friend in Toastmasters told me, and I was just like, dang it, that's not what I'm shooting for.
No. I was trying to be loud and annoying, but that's the way it goes.
Go figure. Yep.
And we got, there's a couple more things here, but one I want to touch on before we run out of time, which is going to happen in a few minutes here. Impulsivity. Addicts are lovers of chaos, and that means that during your first few months of sobriety, you'll want to do or say impulsive things. You know, if your mind tells you to go left, maybe you should consider it and maybe go right instead. Recovery is a process of learning to self-regulate, building self-awareness, and discerning what's for you and what isn't. So what do you do when you're feeling impulsive? The suggestion is go to the closet. Not necessarily a literal closet, but get on your hands and knees or sit cross-legged and connect with yourself. You know, connect with your higher power if that's your thing and plead for strength and sanity. Yeah. You know, feel yourself in your body, get grounded again. And this was a big deal for me because, you know, even in my drinking days, you know, I had all these grandiose ideas. I was going to do this and that. I was going to be a millionaire. And those were even things from, you know, childhood before I started drinking that were just kind of part of my makeup. So not acting on those impulses, it was very unnatural for me in the beginning. Right. And say things. Yeah, I said some things I probably shouldn't have, should have thought about. And you hear a lot in recovery around recovery rooms and stuff that the expression that we pause, you know, we pause when irritated or confused or upset, you know, just taking that moment to think about what you're going to say or what you're going to launch into doing. A lot of people in recovery is, things are going so well. I'm going to sign up for college and I'm going to become a psychologist and help people in recovery. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people I've known in recovery that has been the impulse, and they spend a lot of money, they charge into it, and they find out that it is way more difficult than they thought, way more expensive than they thought, and it consumes an amount of time that takes them away from their family, their friends, their recovery, and it can be really problematic. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible. I've seen some people do it, but usually after some years in recovery, you know,
they decide they want to do something different. I will throw in there really quick that you may not realize right now how much of an impact you make just by progressing in your recovery and working on all these things that you're changing to get better in your relationships and things like that. And what it means even to just come and make the coffee or to go to that meeting and just be present and share what's going on in your life and being a good listener, those things really matter. You know, if you ultimately are led to get into this kind of work, that's great. But please don't forget how beneficial you are just as a person changing your life or just being a good listener for someone else. It really does matter. There are hundreds of people in my life that have made an impact. I'd say close to 1,000, but at least hundreds of people who, whether it was, you know, a handful of moments or years that they've been in my life that have made a difference. So don't underestimate what kind of an impact you are having in your recovery.
Right, right. And for example, this radio program, I was, 23, 3 years into sobriety, mm-hmm. when and in my sobriety, in my program, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, one of the things we have to do, we have to give it away to keep it. So
yes.
I've worked with other men getting sober, helping them go through the step process in AA, mm-hmm. and, you know, learning how to live life on life's terms. When I left my career job at, you know, that company that will remain nameless, but its initials are SEL.
He says it all the time.
I know. I love it. Hey, by the way, greetings, Mike. I hope you're still listening. Anyway, when I left there, it was in like January of 2015, and I was looking for something to kind of replace that necessity to be involved in things. Because a lot of people don't realize it necessarily. Some people do, I suppose, but your employment becomes a huge part of who you think you
are.
Yeah,
a big part of your life, at least.
Yeah.
What you do.
And when you leave that, it leaves a hole that needs to be fixed. So, mm-hmm. you know, I did a couple of, worked some short-term jobs and, you know, a little retail, a little this and that. And then in September, this place opened up. And I read about it in the newspaper, and I came down, and I'm like, what do you need? You know, I'm an electrician. I can do carpenter
work. Johnny's helped out a lot around here.
Yeah. What do you want? And Daryl was like, everything. Come on in, you know. So I started doing stuff here. And then a couple of years later, 2017, the woman who used to do this show decided to move on and do other things, but wanted someone to take it over, and they put out the call. Mm-hmm. And I showed up thinking, well, you know, I did this in college. It's probably not going to be a stretch figuring out how to do it. And Denise showed up. That's where we met. And she was all about it. And it turned out that we worked great together. I mean, as far as conversationally and, you know, I had the technology. She had all sorts of experiences. You were still in your...
I was pretty new in recovery. So yeah. I had graduated the drug court program in like December of 2015. So I'd only been in recovery just right around 2 years probably. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but she had, you had all kinds of sorts of input from what you had learned in that program,
yes.
which was, it's pretty intense.
It is.
Look into it, or we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. We'll get another graduate in here someday and
cool,
really
actually.
Have Denise and them dig into it. Mm-hmm. It gave me a kind of an odd purpose. I mean, I only probably spend like 5 or 6 hours at this in a week's time, but it's so important to me. Mm-hmm. It's so important to me to do that. And even when the weeks where Denise is tied up or I'm traveling or who knows what, you know, I still have to put in the time to post up, you know, rerun shows or whatever.
Yep. And he's committed.
Yeah, it's a commitment. But it's a commitment that I love.
Yes.
And it ties me into the community. It forces me to come into the Latah Recovery Center at least once a week. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm here a lot more than that. But, you know, I've met people. I talk mm-hmm. to people. I get to interview people that volunteer here. We just got a new master's level intern, and she will be on the air, mm-hmm. you know, when she gets her feet under here. She's only been here a few days at this point. But... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it kind of replaced that need I had to be contributing to something outside myself
right.
that wasn't just necessarily service. Within that AA program. Mm-hmm. Because there's a whole world outside AA. I know people that come into a recovery program like that, AA, NA, or whatever, and their whole world revolves around that, and that's not really healthy. Because you got to go out with those weirdos outside of there.
Well, then, as you guys call them, normies.
Yeah, normies. You got to go deal with them normies and live amongst them.
It's
and,
okay.
And they, try to be happy.
Everybody has problems that just might look a little different than yours
and
mine.
Yeah, that's right.
We're all human beings.
A great...
Before I forget, I wanted to say something about impulsivity.
Yeah.
So I've learned, and even this is even in the past like handful of years... that if I'm feeling pretty angry in the evening, I'm probably just grumpy and I should not send that upset text. I should wait until I sleep and see how I feel about things in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I just want to say, sometimes what you were saying about pause is so important, and our emotions can be very big new in recovery. There can be a lot of changes and stuff like that, and we just want to tell somebody how they're wrong or whatever. And it's still okay to do those things. You just might want to make sure that you run it by somebody else, sounding board, and then also don't do it when you're in the heat of being angry. Because again, you're going through a lot of changes. The people around you are going through a lot of changes and have probably been hurt by you and you know, vice versa. So, right. You know, and that's why it's really important to have a handful of friends, you know, people in recovery that might just be a little bit ahead of you, that understand what it looks like to work on things and make amends and stuff like that and show up more properly.
Yep.
And, you know, there were times when I said things that I shouldn't, and it's just a learning process. So
right.
It's a little
and
time.
Then, you know, we talk about making amends for harms we've done, in the program. And, even though I was sober, I still created a lot of amends opportunities.
I still have. You know, I still
you know,
have
I'm,
those.
I had a fellow the other day describe himself as I am a resentment-creating machine.
Ooh.
You know, it's like that little old lady that cuts you off in traffic because she didn't even know you were there because she can barely see over the dashboard, right?
Yeah, it's totally unintentional.
And it's like, I'm going to get all bent out of shape about that when I should just be, you know, happy that, you know, she's going to make it to her doctor's appointment or wherever she's going.
Yeah.
I'll lay back behind her and maybe hopefully help her not kill somebody.
Yeah, I'm usually praying for people if I see something reckless happening.
You're right.
I'm just like, oh no, let's keep everyone safe.
Yeah. So that's, that's a good rounded thing. They talk a little bit more here about the battlefield of the mind, keeping yourself accountable, opening up to community, which are all things that we kind of covered here. Mm-hmm. But it is, I think that's a great heading for that section, Battlefield of the Mind.
I like this line. It says, don't be afraid to take small steps to break old thought patterns, like eating a piece of chocolate instead of turning back to substances. I'm telling you what, food became quite tasty when I quit substances, even more so when I quit smoking cigarettes.
Right.
So don't be afraid to explore the different kinds of chocolates or candies and find what you like and maybe use that as a substitute while you're making these changes and things like that, you know? And that doesn't have to last forever. Every time you get upset, you know, for the rest of your life, you don't have to eat a piece of chocolate. But, I mean, it's better than going to jail or doing something illegal. So.
Well, when I was in early recovery, there was this old guy who always had hard candy on him, and I would be bitching.
You
about
did too.
Yeah. Yeah, I do
now.
Yeah. I'm bitching about
something.
Yeah,
Johnny hasn't brought me candy in a really long time.
Oh,
but carry on.
It's in my pocket.
Oh, okay.
I was bitching about something, and he goes, here. And I'm like, what? He goes, here, is it, you know, like a Werther's or something? And I'm like, oh, I like those. Mm-hmm. And so I started sucking on it, and he was talking to me about it, and it
calmed down, huh?
Calmed me down.
I need to get
and
more candy for my office.
Sugar. When it gets to your brain thinks it's a substance of some sort, and it becomes happy again, and you can be happy.
Curving
too.
The animal inside, yes.
That's right.
The angry thoughts, yeah. That's right. I have to get more candy for my office. Thanks for reminding me that.
Oh yeah, you got to do that.
Usually, what happens though is I get candy for my office for other people, and then I eat it.
Yeah. Well. self-control. Yeah.
Yeah. That's for a different day.
That's another topic.
That's another topic. Yep.
So close it out with the usual, you know, if you think you have a problem with substances or alcohol, you do. And, you know, maybe you should stop by the Latah Recovery Center and talk with Denise or Sean or Cindy or one of our other many, many, many helpful people here and do some work on it. And thanks for listening. And I wanted to throw in one more quick thing. You know, if you have an idea of something you want to learn about that we might be able to help you with, You can email Radio Johnny directly at lrcradiojohnny, all one string there, at gmail.com. So lrcradiojohnny@gmail.com. And we will respond. And it's always good to know what people want to hear about.
Yep. That is good. That
Using
is good
my idea. Imagination is not always effective.
Yeah. We like input.
All right. So, hey, thanks for listening. And we'll see you all next week. See you on the radio, as they say.
Bye.